5 minutes to go, first half. They skip it across Lundin. Lundin over to Bryce. Eisner takes a three, and Bryce hits his first three of the season. He has eight timeouts. Sacred Heart, Beloit by eight.
Ross head fakes on a three, picks it up right side out of Christine. Ian drives into a lane, spins on Donner, back to Cunningham, step back long two, smooth. Chase Cunningham on fire with six straight for the Knights, and they lead it by 13, 44-31 on a 10-0 run.
Some of the highlights from last night's games on the radio, as we had Lincoln at Lakeside on KD Country 94 and Beloit at Sacred Heart on Z96.3 The Lake, and we'll hand it off to Dusty to recap his games. I'll recap mine, and we'll also go over, or I'll just let Dusty go through the scores, and he can recap his games, and then I'll recap mine.
Did have last night on the Kitty Country 94, Lakeside and Lincoln. Lakeside gets to sweep, the girls winning 64-27. The boys won 59-41. Just a quick recap of the girls' game, where the Lady Knights were up 23-0 after one. They led 42-15 at halftime. Never looked back in that one. They're 5-0 now in the Northern Plains League, 10-4 overall. Kylie Bergman with 24 points was our athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health in Beloit. She had 12 of those 24 in the first quarter. Again, Lakeside jumped out to that early lead and had a great start and a great finish as well. 17 points for Lauren Brummett. Our block of the game from H&R Block and Beloit went to Cambry Shone. Connection of the game was Lauren Brummett to Tatum Miller from Cunningham Telephone and Cable for Lincoln. They were led by Avery Obermuller with 13 points, as the Lady Leopards are now 4-8 and 1-4 in the Northern Plains League. Boys game, Lakeside actually trailed by two after one, 18-16, but they outscored Lincoln 17-11 in the second quarter to take a 4-point lead at halftime, and then they outscored them 15-5 in the third to lead by 14, 48-34. Lincoln got within 50-41 in the fourth quarter, but a 9-0 run to end the game for Lakeside gave them the 18-point win, 59-41. 17 for Ross Hudson. Reese Remus was our athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health and Beloit. He had 14 points as well and numerous block shots, which gave him the block of the game as well from H&R Block and Beloit. And Jace Cunningham had 13 points. Pass from Hudson to Remus was our connection to the game. Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Lakeside's now 7-7 overall, 3-2 in the Northern Plains League. Lincoln dropping to 4-8, 1-4 in league play. Gage Stewart and Caleb Dodder each had 10 points for Lincoln in the loss. Let's recap of our games on Katy Country 94. The other scores from the area last night. Wade will recap these. The Beloit girls losing to Sacred Heart 46-43. Beloit boys won 63-52. Other Northern Plains League scores: Osborne over Wilson 72-49 on the girls' side. Trinity Looters had 31. Gracie Reiner 24 and Brooke Beffert 10. Rock Hill's winning over Tescott on the girls' side, 45-25. Thunder Ridge girls beat Pike Valley, 44-30. Sylvan Lucas over Southern Cloud, 43-17. St. John's tipped in a 48-41 win at Bennington as Carly Brummer had 22. And Smith Center beat Hill City, 51-13. Other boys' scores from last night: Osborne over Wilson, 69-52. Rock Hill's beat Tescott, 41-31. Thunder Ridge over Pike Valley, 64-45. Sylvan Lucas beating Southern Cloud, 57-44. Bennington, big win against St. John's tipped in at home, 66-32, and Hill City over Smith Center, 63-33. You can find all the scores from the Northern Plains League and North Central Activities Association that aren't in the immediate area, always all posted at ncksports.com. High school basketball on Tuesday night.
All right, my games last night in Salina, two very competitive basketball games. The girls' game goes to Sacred Heart, 46-43. Beloit was down 5 early, 12-7, went on a 7-0 run. Peyton Remus, a couple of three-pointers in the first quarter. She ended up with a team-high 10, and Beloit tied the game on a nice pass by Remus to Cassandra Thompson for the Cunningham telephone cable connection of the game right before halftime to tie it at 22 apiece. And Sacred Heart got hot from three as Skylar Douglas, freshman, hit a triple, and then Katie Weiss hit a three, and just like that, Sacred Heart was up 8. Beloit was down 6 going in the fourth quarter. They're down 11 with 3:08 to go, 46-35, and it didn't look good. It was very bleak for the Lady Trojans, but they would battle back, and helped out by Sacred Heart missing a couple front ends of one and ones. Marley Fowle with a big three-pointer to cut it to three. Beloit went on an 8-0 run. Had the ball with about 18 seconds to go, but they were out of timeouts. They needed a three to tie the game. Did not get off a game-tying three-point attempt, and they fall 46-43. Lady Trojans now 3-11 on the season, 1-4 in league play, but a valiant comeback that came just a hair short. Marley Fowle was our SNS Drug and Home Health athlete of the game. She had 7 points career high, made both her free throws, hit that big three. She was active on the glass, a couple block shots. She got the block of the game for H&R Block and Beloit, never settled for less as well. So Marley Fowle, a nice game. Cassandra Thompson chipped in with 9 for the Lady Trojans. They fall 46-43. Sacred Heart was led by Eshelman with 12, Katie Weiss with 13 and 4 threes, and the Skylar Douglas, a freshman, had 10 and a couple triples. Sacred Heart now 5-7 on the year. And then the boys game, Beloit was down early, 13-10, and Beloit put a 16-0 spurt together, including a three-pointer, as you heard by Bryce Beisner, his first of the season. And Beloit was up 26-13, and Beloit was up 8 right before halftime. Wyatt Brockman hit a deep three-pointer to beat the buzzer, and that gave Beloit an 11-point lead going in the locker room. So that was a huge three-pointer by Wyatt. And then in the third quarter, Beloit pushed the lead to 15, and then Sacred Heart came all the way back, battled back, and cut it to 4 at 49-45. Beloit got a bucket, made it 51-45. Then Noah Gershner, a big three-pointer, gave Beloit a 9-point lead, 54-45. Sacred Heart would get no closer than 8 the rest of the way. Beloit couldn't quite put them away, but they were in control for the most part the entire game after they went on that 16-0 run. And it was Brockman and Gershner with the Cunningham telephone cable connections of the game with those two well-timed three-pointers. And then the SNS Drug and Home Health athletes of the game, I'm sitting here, I'm like, dude, I got Eli Johnson dominating the first quarter, had 11 points, didn't score the rest of the game, but without what he did in the first quarter, Beloit might have been buried. Mm-hmm. And Bryce Beisner has 20. He has 11 in the second quarter, and he had three blocked shots on the first possession Sacred Heart had. He blocked three shots. I mean, he was on pace for like 243 blocks. He had three blocks in first possession. There was a play in the fourth quarter where he went up to block it, and Max Ehrlich goes in, realized he was up against a tree, and then came back down with the ball. Like, he just, like, I'm not even going to bother shooting it, and landed and traveled. Like, you don't see the high school varsity players go in the lane, jump up, oh, yeah, I'm going to be blocked, come back down and land for a travel. That's exactly what happens. Like, I've got no chance to get this guy. I don't know how many blocks Bryce ended up with last night. I don't know how many rebounds, but he might have been close to a triple-double. He might have been close to a triple-double. Mm-hmm. I don't chart. There's only so many stats I can handle,
yeah.
And I can't do blocks and rebounds and assists and steals all at the same time. I have an idea sometimes, and I'm sure he had a double-double last night. He was fantastic, and you could give him athlete of the game almost every single game. But last night is a perfect example of the balance that Beloit has. Is that Beisner gets a lot of focus, and he still scored 20. But I mentioned how he carried the way in the second quarter. Eli Johnson carried the way in the first quarter. And then it was Wyatt Brockman, Noah Gershner getting hot from three in the third quarter, where Brockman hit two of his three threes in the third. Gershner hit three of his four threes in the second half and a couple in the third. And so Gershner ends up with 14. Brockman ended up with 14. Johnson ended up with 11. Beisner ended up with 20. And at one point, Beisner had 12. Johnson had 11. Gershner and Brockman had 11. Now, you can't get closer balance than that. And then there have been many games where Quinn Eilert has scored 14 or 15, and Brody Litton off the bench has scored 8 or 9. And so they've got balance. And so when you defend Beloit, you can try to key on Beisner, but then Brockman and Gershner can hit you with the 3, or Quinn can hit you with the 3, or the mid-range jumper, or you double up Bryce, and then Eli can get some loose change and some offensive rebounds and stick backs as he got last night. And that's what makes this team tough to defend. So Beloit's got it going, I think, offensively, no doubt. And they win the game 63-52. They're 10-4. They won 10 of the last 11. They're 4-1 in league play, and they get a day off, as Coach Eilert said afterwards last night, taking a day off to reset after playing 4 games in 6 days against high-level competition. And they'll be back at it next Tuesday when they host Republic County. And so those four guys were our SNS Drug and Home Health co-athletes of the game. I couldn't pick one. And then the block of the game, well, Bryce is going to have that almost every other game, at least, if not more. He's got tons of he doesn't even have to paint his room. He can just put the H&R Block certificates as wallpaper, and he'll fill at least two of the walls in his room. He got the block of the game for H&R Block and Beloit, and I mentioned the connections of the game. So big win for Beloit. Sacred Heart boys, give them credit. Didn't fold. They could easily folded a few times. Max Ehrlich, a good player, had 4 threes and 18 points, and Mike Matucci, point guard, had 16. And Sacred Heart now 7-5. They've lost 3 of their last 4, I believe it is. So good win for Beloit boys, and the girls a valiant comeback, but it came up just a bit short, and that's what took place last night down in Salina. Bryce Woodall, former Wachiniite, if there's such a term. He is the athletic director down there. Well, how much older is he than you?
He's like 3 or 4 Bryce, years. I think, was either in my or either I think he was between you and
he's
and
younger
Brad.
Than me. He was younger than
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I think he was maybe a year younger than you.
See, I was thinking he was
maybe more, he was in Brad's class.
I think he's more than 1 year younger.
Yeah,
than
he
me,
might have
Ryan,
been.
Ryan, his brother's only a year older than me, and Bryce, I was pretty sure, was more than just a couple years younger than Ryan. But I don't know for sure.
Yeah, he may have been in Brad's class, because I wanted to say he was in one of my siblings' classes, but yeah. I can't remember.
What Kenny Connection strikes again.
Yeah.
Bryce Woodall's athletic
it's all over the place,
cigar.
Right?
It is. Can't get away from it. Between the Malays and the Finchams and Dynases and Gershners and who else? Too many to name.
Yeah.
Too many to name. In fact, I think I named them all, actually, right there. So that's what took place basketball last night. Locker room chats today.
Yeah, we'll talk with the coaches of Beloit Osborne Smith Center in Thunder Ridge around 5:15 here this evening on Katy Country 94 and also online at katycountry94.com. Always there at the podcast if you ever miss them when they air live.
And the KBCA rankings came out.
Yeah, we have new rankings this week, and we'll look at the 1A Division I girls. Osborne is number 4. 1A Division II girls, St. John's tipping back in at number 7. Wilson's number 9. Smith Center girls are number 3 in 2A. Phillipsburg's number 2 in Class 3A. Southeast Salina's number 10. And on the boys' side, Osborne down number, actually stayed at number 8 despite losing the MPL Tournament Championship game, but they stay right there at 1A Division I. And 1A Division II, Thunder Ridge starting to get some recognition. They're up in at number 10 on the boys' side. TMP boys are number 2 in Class 2A, and then as we expected, Sabetha moves over Southeast Saline again in 3A boys, Southeast number 2 in those rankings. You can find the full rankings at ncksports.com.
All right, we do have you know, some of the double-digit scores are posted at some of these games at ncksports.com. I'll update mine here in a little bit from last night, so you can go check some of that out as well, and just click on the team that you want to follow. All right, college basketball last night. I didn't get a chance to see really anything other than some highlights, since Big 12 and college basketball likes to, you know, interfere with high school hoops and put it on Tuesday night. And hey, KU K-State on Tuesday, next Tuesday. Yay! Iowa State K-State, great battle between number 5 Wildcats and number 12 Cyclones.
It's up and it's good. And number 12 Iowa State has taken down number 5 Kansas State. Don't call it an upset in the Big 12. These were two evenly matched heavyweights that went toe-to-toe for 40 minutes. But Iowa State remains unbeaten inside Hilton Coliseum.
K-State falls. The Big 12 race is just as tight as it's ever been before. Here's Jerome Tang on the ending and the loss to Iowa State, 80-76.
We do game-ending stuff all the time, and I thought we really executed well down the stretch. We just couldn't come up with that offense, that defensive rebound that we needed. You know, we got the stop, and then their guys made shots, you know, like big-time players make big-time plays and big-time moments, and their guys did it tonight, and so all the credit to them.
Iowa State's supposed to do what they did. They're supposed to win at home. K-State's trying to steal one on the road, and they nearly did. They led by 2 at halftime. Iowa State up by 10 in the second half. K-State got close there at the very end with some free throws by Marquise Noel, who finished the night with 23 points. But at the end of the day, it was Iowa State getting a win. Keontae Johnson, a double-double, 15 points, 10 boards. Cam Carter added 15. K-State, Iowa State both now 17-3 overall, 6-2 in the Big 12. Number 10, Texas beat Oklahoma State, 89-75 in Austin. And so Iowa State, K-State, and Texas are all tied atop the conference standings at 6-2. And then you've got Baylor and KU at 5-3, and TCU's only has got 3 losses. They're 5-3. There's 5 teams within a game at the top of the Big 12. That's half the conference. TCU cruised past Oklahoma 79-52. Tonight, West Virginia is at Texas Tech at 6 o'clock on ESPNU. Just your thoughts on Iowa State and K-State. And, yeah, it is a loss, but at the same time, Iowa State's favored going in at home, so forth and so on. And I mean, they didn't get blown out of the building. They had a chance. They were up at halftime. I mean, it's tough to win the Big 12 on the road, and K-State's already stolen one at Austin. They've stolen one at Baylor. They're not going to win every road game.
No, that's it is.
So I don't think you should be disappointed.
No,
is what
not
I'm
at
saying.
All. As Jerome Tang says, it's one loss, right? Yes. Like we get, and as after KU's, like we got one win. That's what we got in the win column was one win, and so it is about playing each game, and it's one win or it's one loss, and if you stack up more wins than losses, obviously you're going to be in a better position. So that's what it comes down to in the end. K-State, I didn't feel disappointed with the way they played last night. Really, Iowa State shot great all night. Like 57%. I think at one point they were like 63% or something when I was listening on the radio coming back. I think that's what the number was, but you can play great defense and they're still going to hit shots, right? And they're on their home floor, they're going to hit shots. You're going to go on the road, you're going to lose some. I think we all understand that this league, you know, we've been talking about it since the beginning of conference play. It's going to be a tough conference, and you're not going to go undefeated. You're probably not going to win this league with 2 losses. So it's going to come down to, you know, stealing a couple more on the road to get the – I wouldn't say stealing, but beating the teams that you're better than on the road. The Texas Techs of the world, you know, the West Virginias, if you can go get those games that you're supposed to, maybe even on the road, then that's who's going to win the Big 12 in the end. So, no, this is a game that it was a 50-50 game. game. You heard the announcer saying it, right, on the play-by-play cut. You know, it's 50-50 game. Somebody's going to win it. Somebody's going to lose it. And K-State took a loss there, but they're still 6-2 in the conference. I like the way they played. I watched most of the second half. They just didn't make a couple shots when they might have needed to, and Iowa State did. That's really what it came down to for me when I was watching. I didn't get to watch intently, but that's what it was for me. So, you know, you take the loss, you move on. The momentum that's built up right now in conference play, I'm still not a huge fan of playing Florida on Saturday, but that's just the way it is. We're going to play an SEC game on Saturday and get back to Kansas on Tuesday.
Now you know how it feels to be like Kansas.
Well, and I've felt that the whole time.
Right, but it's not as big a deal when you're not good. Yeah. But now you're really good, so now you're like, I don't like this breaking up the conference part. I think it's actually, I'll say of all the years, this is a good time. Because the Big 12 is so dang tough.
It is.
This actually might be a bit of a reprieve.
Yeah.
Florida's the easiest game on K-State's schedule the rest of the way. Do you know that?
Yeah.
So why not have an easier game against SEC foe? That's what I'm saying. They're getting a little bit of a break. And, of course, Kansas goes to Kentucky. That's not much of a break. But, I mean, Kentucky's not ranked, but they're better than their record indicates. And Florida probably is, too.
Yeah.
But Keontae Johnson goes up against his former team. You know? Yeah. And he'll be ready to go. So we'll talk with John Kurtz about, you know, would K-State overlook Florida, look KU ahead on Tuesday in Lawrence and Allen Fieldhouse, and the possibility of KU having a four-game losing streak going into the rematch between K-State and KU on Tuesday. You talk about a hornet's nest that K-State would be going into there. I still think K-State can win in Lawrence. I really do.
Yeah, I'm hoping KU beats Kentucky for that part of it for sure, because I don't want to go to Allen Fieldhouse with them on a four-game losing streak. I'm not saying K-State can't win the game and make a five-game losing streak, but that's not ideal.
No, it's not. No, it's not. All right, so that's the basketball side of things on the men's side. The women's tonight, K-State women are back at it on the road at Oklahoma State. Wildcats at 13-7, 2-5 in the Big 12, while the Cowgirls are 13-6, 3-4 in the conference, and their first year under Hoxie native and former K-State assistant J.C. Hoyt. 6:30 tip-off tonight on ESPN Plus from Stillwater. Well, for the second straight day, the Royals trading guys. They traded Michael A. Taylor to the Twins, got a couple of relievers that, you know, I think could actually help them down the road, in particular one of the two that could be good. And they both have power stuff, so that's good. And they're young, and they're cheap. And now the Royals have finally pulled the plug on the Alberto Mondesi experiment. And I have to admit, I have mixed emotions about this. The Royals traded Mondesi to the Red Sox for left-handed relief pitcher Josh Taylor. Mondesi's inability to stay healthy, limited to just 358 games in seven seasons, and yet he's still young, as his most recent injury was a torn ACL that he's continuing to recover from. Over the past two seasons, Mondesi played in just 50 games combined for the Royals. Taylor, who the Royals acquired in the trade, has played three seasons in the bigs with the Red Sox, 4-3, ERA of 3.69, 120 relief appearances, including 61 games last year. His ERA was 3.40. So, there's another arm for the bullpen for the Royals. The Royals' bullpen has to improve. I know there's a lot of people that were ready to cast Mondesi aside last year. Get rid of him, and I'm like, dude, you're not going to get much for him if you trade him now. And you really didn't get a lot now when you traded. You traded for a guy that has back injury, back problems in the past, and maybe Josh Taylor, who, of course, was a great player for the Indians in Major League. That was Jake. That was his brother, Jake. Yep, brother Jake.
Probably Josh. His dad by this point.
That might be his dad. Yeah, Josh is Jake's son.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is this is not something that makes the Royals really much better. Now, honestly, you got to say who plays third base. Because if Mondesi was recovered, he would have played third, or he would have played short, and Witt was going to play third. And you want Hunter Dozier to play every day at third? Okay, I don't think I'm all excited about that. And Hunter Dozier didn't even hit that well last year either, on top of that. So Royals have a hole at third base. What they're going to do there, I don't know. Might be a guy they signed a minor league deal recently with that came from the Phillies. Maybe he can play some third. I don't follow the Royals that closely in regards to their minor league pickups because, I'm sorry, I don't really get excited about minor league acquisitions. But I'm torn on this one because Adalberto Mondesi is still a young player. And, I mean, he's got all the talent in the world. And he showed it for about a month or two with the Royals that one year where he was hitting the cover off the ball. And he was amazing. he has star potential. Once again, the key word there is star potential. But this is a guy that is not over the hill, 32 years old, or anything like that. In fact, I'm pulling up to see how old he is. And he is, I want to remember. Yeah, that's what I thought, 27. He's only 27, but the knock on him is being healthy. And a change of scenery will probably do Adalberto Mondesi good. And perhaps different athletic trainers and doctors may do him good. Maybe the problem isn't Mondesi as much as the rehab. Maybe the problem isn't as much about Mondesi, but the people around him. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that it's a combination of all of it, probably. It is bad luck. It is bad luck when Mondesi gets hurt. And sometimes just when he starts to get going, he flashed gold glove level defense at short. Tremendous speed. He got a base pass. He could steal really any time he wanted. That's the fun part I enjoyed about him. He had some power. And now he is no longer with the Royals. And, I mean, he showed those flashes that we talked about. Like, for instance, in 2019, and this is the year he played his most games, all right, 102 games, 263 batting average doesn't impress you, but he had 43 stolen bases, 62 RBIs, 10 triples, 20 doubles, 9 home runs. That's 39 extra base hits. That's a lot of extra base hits at the age of 23. 43 steals. That's tremendous. Then the COVID-shortened season, he led the league with 24 steals. He only hit 256. Last couple years, been hurt in and out, 230. Last year, he only had 54 plate appearances, so hard to fault him for hitting 140. You get off to a slow start. But I am torn on this whole Mondesi thing from this standpoint. I know he wasn't helping the Royals being hurt. Totally get it. And what I was hoping for is that he'd get healthy enough to, one, he's good enough to where we keep him, or he gets healthy enough and we're like, you know what, now he's got more trade value. But to trade him away for a left-handed relief pitcher, at least you got something. I'm cool with that. But I have this fear, and I hope it comes to fruition because I hope Mondesi does well. But I have this fear that Mondesi is going to stay healthy. I have this fear that Mondesi is going to tear it up at some point in his career with some team, maybe just for 1 year, maybe for two. And I know it was so easy for Royals fans to just give up on the guy. But the reason the Royals didn't give up on the guy was he was only 24, 25, 26. He plays gold glove level defense at short when he plays. He is one of the best base stealers in baseball when he plays. He has tremendous pop for a smaller, lankier kid. I mean, he is a five-tool player. And those are, they don't grow on trees. Adalberto Mondesi is a rare, unique talent. But at the same time, if he's never healthy, what's the point, right? That's what Royals fans will say, and that's what they said last year. Well, what's the point? My point was, well, you're not going anywhere anyway as a team. And so you can keep him on your roster. He's not costing you a lot of money. And maybe, just maybe, he'll finally be healthy. Well, the Royals waited as long as they could and have finally said, you know what? We got to move on. We can't count on him to be healthy, which I understand. And we're going to get something for him. They apparently, J.J. Pecola thought that's the best they could get for Adalberto Mondesi, is a relief pitcher that did fairly well last year and a few years prior to that. We get somebody to help our bullpen. We trade away a guy that isn't going to, you know, keep Bobby Witt from playing shortstop, which he wasn't going to anyway, I don't think, because Mondesi's always hurt. But Mondesi could have played third. Remember, they had the experiment. Mondesi playing some third there while he was healthy, and Witt was playing some shortstop. Although, you know, last year they had started out with Mondesi as their shortstop. And I tried to tell this guy from CBS Sports that the guy in front of Witt is Mondesi, and he was. And then he got hurt again, torn his ACL, which stinks. He's had horrible luck. But he's only 27. He's got pop. He's got speed. He's got a glove. If he stays healthy, and I don't know if he's ever going to stay healthy, but if he does just for I would like to see what Aldomar Montesi could do just for one full year staying healthy. If he could play 150 out of 162 games, I think he's a kid that's going to hit 25 homers minimum, and I think he's going to drive in 80 minimum, and I think he's going to steal 50 bases minimum. And he might only hit 265. Who cares? If he can walk and get on base, which he doesn't have the greatest walk numbers, I will say that. Mm-hmm. That's something. He is a free swinger at times, and he really strode the plate at times. But he's got all the potential still in the world to be a really good player, and he's still only 27. So I understand the move. I get it. But part of me is torn because I'm afraid he might tear it up somewhere else. And I think the Royals have been that way, too, for the last couple of years. Held on to him, held on to him, held on to him, and finally said, okay, we got something for him that's a major league level player for our bullpen. We better take it. It's the best we're going to get. Or maybe they were like, we know he's not coming back from the ACL as well as we'd like.
It seems like he's going to be missing some of the right. early part of this right. next season, too. And right. I think that's where you make the decision, like,
yeah,
we lost almost all of last year. Now we're going to lose some of this year, too. And it's like you get to the point where it's like, he's not helping us.
And I get it. But still, there's a part of me is like, man, I'm scared but yet hopeful that Mondesi does well somewhere.
Yeah, I think
a guy with that much talent, you hate to see it wasted.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if he does miss, say he misses April or something like that, it still would have been nice to see what he could have done. Yeah. And I'm not so sure that the Royals couldn't have held on to him for this year and tried.
Oh,
that.
They could
but,
have.
But at the same time, I kind of think I like the guy that they got for him. If he's healthy, it's kind of trading one problem for another. But, if he pans out, then that's a guy you're going to need somewhere down the line as well. I see what you're saying, though. He's a guy that you just had all these hopes for. And, there is a point where you just have to say, let's move on. But I was just kind of hoping they'd hold on for just a little bit longer. But, I'm not going to, like you said, I can understand the move at the same time. So,
I was on the other side of it. I sat in here last year, and when the ACL tear happened, I was like, at some point, you just move on.
Well, I know that when he's 30, I'm with you. When he's in and still young and such a talented player, and it'd be one thing if he's just a home run hitter and strikes out a lot, like Chris Davis for the Orioles, that got that big contract and went horrible afterwards. But he's a five-tool player. I mean, honestly, he's the first five-tool player the Royals have had since Carlos Beltran.
I just wonder.
Now Bobby Witt Jr.
They have another one now. At the time they didn't. And I understood your contention of who he was and what he could be, but he never was what he could be.
I know. I get it. I do.
So I was on the other side of it saying, okay, yeah, we can wish and hope in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first. And it's just like,
my point was the Royals aren't going anywhere.
Last year they didn't need to make the move during the season.
Yeah.
But if you can make it this year where you feel like maybe you're coming up a little bit and you need somebody to maybe put something in to a spot where you can make it a little bit quicker in one place to fill a need. And I know you're not going to get what you thought you could get for Mondesi, but nobody's going to give anything for him when he's played this many games. And the sad thing for Mondesi is the 1 year he was healthy was a 60-game season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he played 59 out of the 60 games when they had the shortened COVID season.
The sad thing is
he stayed healthy like that whole year, but it was a short season.
Yeah. Well, and here's interesting news. The Royals apparently are discussing trades that would involve Hunter Dozier, which I'm all for, and Nicky Lopez. Now you're starting to wonder here. Wait a minute. If you trade Nicky Lopez, who can play third, second, or short,
you're opening up second.
Massey's playing. That means
Bobby's short.
Right.
So then you're still
looking. You still need a third baseman.
Yeah.
And you get rid of Dozier, you definitely don't have a third baseman.
Yeah.
So if you trade Dozier, which I'm okay with, and you trade Nicky Lopez, which Dozier played some outfield too, so that takes away another guy in the outfield mix, as you've talked about, Dusty. Nicky Lopez, listen, he's not a guy that has a lot of pop, but he's a good team player. He can bunt. He can steal. No extra base pop at all. Outstanding defender at second or short, can play some third. He gives you a lot of flexibility. You better get a good, decent return for Nicky Lopez, in my opinion. But at the same time, you don't want your starting infield to be Michael Massey at second, Lopez at third, because Lopez could be your starter at third at the beginning of the year, too. Nicky Lopez, he's played some third. And Bobby Witt Jr. at short. Or I think what you're seeing here, based on these rumors out there, is that the Royals, last year, Bobby Witt Jr. went from third. He started at third. Mondesi was at short. Then he went to short. Then he went back to third because Lopez went to short, and then Massey played second. And I think what the Royals are saying, and I think they even came out and said it, actually, Bobby Witt Jr. is our shortstop. We're not going to jerk him around anymore, which I agree with. And although, defensively, Bobby Witt Jr.'s metrics, he is a better third baseman than shortstop. It's been proven in the short period of time, over a year or two, that Bobby Witt Jr. is better at third than at short. But the Royals draft him as a shortstop. They want Bobby Witt Jr. to play. And he's had some sexy, flashy plays at short. And he's also made some errors at short. And so he's better defensively at third. But the Royals basically are saying here, with all these moves, Mondesi shipped out, and we're entertaining offers for Lopez. It is clear, the Royals said, there is nobody else we want to play shortstop but Bobby Witt Jr., which I can't disagree with.
Yeah, I think a lot of the moves they're making are based on the premise of we need dudes playing in one spot.
Yes, which is great.
I don't need MJ Melendez playing three outfield spots, catcher and DH. Right. Like, I need him in maybe two spots because he's not going to catch
the whole time. Catcher or right field, and that's it.
Yeah, like, I don't need him playing left and center as well as right, and then playing catcher and DH when he's this young trying to learn just how to be a Major League Baseball player.
Absolutely.
That was my contention the whole year last year. I don't care if you want to make him an outfielder, but don't do it all and make him play four positions in the middle of the season.
Agreed.
And so that's, I think, a lot of what these moves are. Trading Michael A. Taylor gives you somebody that can just play that spot, right? If it's Drew Waters or if it's whoever it is, can play that spot, and he's set in that spot because Michael A. Taylor, you don't need him for his defense there, and you feel better about playing somebody else there every day. And now that opens up another spot to where you can move. Maybe MJ Melendez will be the right fielder. Maybe Nick Prado will be the right fielder, and Vinny will play first base, right? Like,
maybe.
And so opening up that outfield a little bit changes a little bit of what you're doing, and you can try to focus on these guys playing one spot, because it's not helping them in the batting lineup when you're moving them around on defense either. I mean, there's so many things you got to focus on as a player for nine innings, and now you're just, it's like, okay, what position am I playing today? You don't even know coming into the day, like, where am I at today?
Well, and you're looking at the outfielder situation. I mean, you got Kyle Isbell, who's played good defense last year. Drew Waters, they really like. I like him a lot. I think he's your center fielder. Edward Olivares, he hits really well. He's not a good defensive player, but maybe you find a spot for him in the outfield, or he's a fourth outfielder. You mentioned Prado and Pascatino. If Salvi's going to catch, then Pascatino's your DH, and then Melendez is in the outfield. But when Salvi is the DH, then what do you do? Is Vinny going to sit on the bench and Prado plays first? Or is Prado going to be in the minors to start this year? I mean, he went back down last year. After he came up, he struggled a little bit, went down, and Vinny P was the first baseman. So I don't know exactly how this team is coming together per se, but I am 100,000% with you. Like, okay, you might have to play two different positions, but unless you're the ultimate utility guy like Ben Zobrist or Nicky Lopez or Whit Merrifield.
Yeah,
and I even got tired of them jerking him around too, but because he thought he was going to be second base, an injury happened, and he had to play outfield all the time. Whatever. As a player, and I think at any level, you do better if you don't have to focus on one or two positions instead of three or four, and especially at the big league level. So I'm with you, and we'll see what the Royals are doing. But it's very clear Bobby Witt Jr. is the shortstop. He ain't going to be playing third this year, and if he is, then something has probably badly gone wrong. And it is interesting that the White Sox are interested in Nicky Lopez. You'd be trading him in division after you just traded Michael A. Taylor in division. I don't see the Royals wanting to trade Nicky Lopez to the White Sox, but get a good enough haul for him. Shouldn't you?
Bring back Moose to third base.
Oh, my. Yeah, Moose is a free agent. He's available. Hosmer's now with the Cubs. Congratulations. Yeah. You get Hosmer at first base there for the Cubbies. And Moustakas is available and out there if you want to bring him back. Why not? Let's just go get Greg Hall and Wade Davis again. And let's go find Ryan Madsen. Where's Chris Young? Let's get Gerard Dyson. We need another outfielder, right? Because we got rid of Taylor, right, Dusty? We need Gerard Dyson back.
Yeah.
You know, and then Drew Butera. Let's get him back. We need a backup catcher. No, we don't, but we could have him back. Bring Ned back. I mean, why not? He can be the bench coach. He can just help as a consultant, as he did and then took over. Remember that after Trey Hellman. So anyway, we're joking, of course, but the Royals have made some moves to try to strengthen their bullpen. All right, that is very clear that they've done that. And Aroldis Chapman is not an official thing. There's a lot of rumors that the Royals would sign Aroldis Chapman. So then you'd have your so-called dominant closer at the end, but how much does he have left in the tank? I don't know. And he ended up not even being on the postseason roster for the Yankees because he ticked off the organization because of a few things he did. So I don't know how that fits into a rebuilding team, having Chapman, but maybe it bridges the gap. I mean, Barlow was pretty good as a closer last year. So lots of things to answer for the Royals, no doubt.
He's one of those guys you hope pitches well, and then you can trade him at the All-Star break.
Yeah, that's what we did with Michael A. Taylor. And we'll see if those relievers turn into anything.